And it's my great pleasure to take this opportunity to introduce our work on the unconventional magnetism, the dynamic generation of spin electric coupling and electron liquid crystal state. First, let me thank Leo for the organization and giving me the opportunity for this talk. These are our two recent publications. I printed some of them. There, if you are interested, just come to pick one. Let me introduce my collaborators on this topic. They are Professor Eduardo Fredkin and Mr. Kai Sun at UIUC, and Professor Shuqing Zhang at Stanford. I also thank Professors Liang, McBeasley, Sanka, Balsama, Sandy Fetter, Jason Ho, Andres Ludwig, Yongbai King, Steve Kilson, Tony Leggett, and Jiang Zanen for very helpful discussions. This is the outline of the talk. First, I will give a long introduction. Basically, I will explain our definition of unconventional magnetism. I will show it has deep connections to several important research directions in condensed matter physics. After that, I will present the mechanism for this unconventional magnetic state and further discuss the low energy excitations over the ground state. Finally, I will discuss the possible experimental realization and the detection method. This is the structure of the introduction part. Basically, I will show this unconventional magnetic state has deep connections with these three research directions, including the unconventional superconductivity, spin orbital coupling, and anisotropic electron liquid crystal state. I will begin with the motivation of the work by making an analogy between magnetism and superconductivity, focusing on their symmetry properties and spatial rotations. Let me first reveal some basic knowledge of ferromagnetic states. You know, ferromagnetism has been known for thousands of years. In time of the ancient Greece and ancient China, people observed that the lodestone attracts iron. Ferromagnetism has important applications throughout human history. One of the earliest and one of the most important applications is a compass. This picture shows the structure of the earliest compass. It's a spoon made of lodestone. You can rotate on this tree. When it stops, the handle of the spoon points to south. So the Chinese name for this compass is called south pointer. But our modern understanding of ferromagnetism appears after the establishment of quantum mechanics. So basically, ferromagnetism is a many-body collective effect. The driving force is exchange interaction among electrons. For example, if two electrons with same spin configuration, by Pauli's exclusion principle, their orbital wave function has to be anti-symmetrized. So these two particles, they cannot come too close to each other. On the other hand, if two electrons with opposite spin configuration, they are distinguishable and can come close to each other. So by polarizing their spin configuration, we can see some Coulomb-repulsive interaction energy. This effect is called exchange interaction. This picture also applies for many-body system. If the exchange interaction is strong enough, then the system will develop spontaneous spin polarization. For example, some electron of the spin down can flip the sign of the spin and move to the top of the spin up electron scene. Stoner gave a criterion to describe how strong the interaction is needed to drive this phase transition. Well, the U is the average interaction strength, and the N0 is the density of state over the Fermi surface. When U times N0 reaches the dimensionless constant, if it is larger than a certain value, then the ferromagnetic phase transition occurs. Now, let me continue to reveal some symmetry properties of the ferromagnetic state. Certainly, the spin rotational symmetry is already broken because of the spin polarization. However, if we look at in the orbital channel, actually the orbital rotational symmetry is not broken. The spin polarization over the Fermi surface is a constant spin polarized along a fixed direction. This situation is quite similar to what occurs in a conventional superconductivity, which is characterized by the formation of Kuhl pairs. In a conventional case, or in the SU Kuhl pairing, the pairing wave function is a constant which doesn't change either on the Fermi surface. So in this sense, the ordinary ferromagnetic state can be considered as a S-type of magnetism. So we know for the pore pairing structure, in addition to the conventional pore pairing, nature provides us many unconventional pore pairing structures. Basically, they are high partial wave channel generalization of pore pairs. The most celebrated example is the high TC cuprate, where the pairing wave function changes the sign of the Fermi surface, exhibits a D-wave structure. We also have many other type unconventional core pairing, for example, the P-wave core pairing, which occurs in the strontium resonance and the helium-3 systems. So, by making an analogy between superconductivity and the magnetism, it is quite natural to further study the high partial wave channel generalization of the ferromagnetic state. Now, in this unconventional magnetic state, we will see the spin polarization is no longer a constant over the Fermi surface, but a variance over the momentum. These two pictures show the Fermi surface structures for the two possible P-wave magnetic states. They include both isotropic case and anisotropic case. Let's look at the isotropic phase. Well, the dashed line is the original Fermi surface before the instability. After phase transition, the Fermi surface splits into a larger one and a small one. On a large Fermi surface, for example, electron spin can become to be parallel to its momentum, while on the small Fermi surface, electron spin is anti-parallel to its momentum. Such a state is isotropic. The P-wave feature is clear if we change the direction of momentum k to minus k, spin flips the sign. This isotropic state has an anisotropic cousin. Now, in such a state, the spin up electron from the surface is shifted to the right, and spin down from the surface is shifted to the left. If we change the direction of momentum k to minus k, spin also flips the sign.
Yeah. So far that only exchange forces are involved, or spin orbit also is involved. What is the assumption here?
I will discuss more carefully later. But the spin at the Hamiltonian level, we don't have spin up the coupling. The spin up the coupling is a result, not the reason.
What is the symmetry group in the background?
It's the
total spin rotation, yeah?
Spin rotation and orbital rotation, two symmetries.
Separated. The direct product of two S.
Exactly. Yeah, I will discuss in a few slides of the symmetry breaking pattern of
there is a complete classification of magnetism in this exchange case, which was done by Andreev and Marchenko.
Yes.
Many years ago, do you know about that?
That's in the real space, in my understanding.
Mm-hmm.
That's in the real space, in some triangular lattice.
It doesn't matter.
Well, this is an itinerant system. It's a result of Pomerantchev instability.
Okay.
Before I discuss the magnetism and the properties of this unconventional magnetic state, let me provide more background material from experimental side. We'll see in this, let me begin with the isotropic phase. We'll see in such a phase, the spin orbital coupling has already been dynamically generated from many-body interaction. So this is provide a new mechanism for the spin orbital coupling. You know, in condensed matter physics, the spin orbital coupling plays an important role, in particular in the emerging science of spintronics. Basically, because of spin orbital coupling, people can manipulate electron spin degree of freedom by using electric fields. Basically, electric field couples to electron orbital motion, which affects spin degree of freedom, so spin orbital coupling. For example, recently there's a considerable research interest in the called spin Hall effect, which is a generalization of the ordinary charge Hall effect. In a Hall effect, there's an external magnetic field. It passes a current, and because of Lorentz force, the current is deflected. As a result, on the sample's edge, it develops a charge imbalance, which results in a Hall voltage. In a spin Hall case, there's no external magnetic field, but because of spin orbital coupling, the deflection pattern for spin up electron and spin down electron are opposite. As a result, there's no charge imbalance, but develop opposite spin accumulation pattern on the sample's edge. This result has been theoretically predicted by Professor Chen Liu's group at Austin, also with my predicted by my former PhD advisor Shu Chen Zhang's group at Stanford, and also some pioneering work by Jorge Hirsch at San Diego. And also this deflection pattern has already been observed experimentally. Now, let's continue to reveal some microscopic origin of spin-orbital coupling. We know spin-orbital coupling actually originates from relativistic physics as a low-energy approximation to a Dirac equation. This can be intuitively understood as follows. Suppose an electron moves in an external electric field. If they change the reference frame, if they set the Kolmogorov frame with the electron, then the electron is at rest, and the electric field begins to move. And due to the Lorentz transformation, you know, this will induce an internal magnetic field which couples electron spin. This gives rise to spin-orbital coupling. As we can see in this conventional mechanism for the spin-orbital coupling, this is largely a single body effect, not directly related to many body interactions. Since we know many body physics is more interesting and richer than the single body physics, it would be interesting to provide a deep connection between spin-orbital coupling and many body interactions. In the following, we will provide such a mechanism and we show a dynamically generated spin-orbital coupling through unconventional magnetic phase transitions, and this is a many-body collective effect. Since this spin-orbital coupling is generated through phase transitions, it has certain advantages. First, the spin-orbital coupling strength can be easily tuned.
Yeah. Is it the same spin orbit which appears, for example, in anti-ferromagnetic, exchange anti-ferromagnetic?
Anti-ferromagnetic.
Why is it? So we have a coupling of direction of spin to position in this case, yeah?
You mean the, just the ordinary ferromagnet S dot S?
Standard anti-ferromagnet with only exchange of direction.
That doesn't have spin up the coupling, it's SU2 invariant.
Again, you have the dependence of magnetization on position. This is a kind of what we call
spin-orbit
coupling.
No, this
without
you exchange interaction cannot give spin up the coupling. It's SU2 invariant, right? S dot S, there's no spin up the coupling. If you have spin up the coupling, then SU2 will be broken. For example, Galachinsky Moria. Are you talking the Galachinsky Moria kind of spin-orbit coupling?
But here also there is no spin-orbit coupling in the background yet. That is only the, due to violation of symmetry in the fields, yeah?
Well, but the nail state doesn't have spin-orbital coupling.
What do you call...
I will show this, the symmetry breaking pattern. It's similar to what you said about the Andrew for the result, but it's in the itinerant system. Okay. So let's look at again this isotropic PVO magnetic states, where the Fermi surface split into a large Fermi surface and a small Fermi surface. On a large Fermi surface, electron spins parallel to its momentum, while on the small Fermi surface, electron spin is anti-parallel to its momentum. Clearly, in such a system, the spin is no longer conserved, but the helicity operator, the spin, the projection, and its momentum remains a good quantum number. Over the Fermi surface, we can see there's no net spin moment. So the other parameter here is the spin dipole moment in the momentum space. This is the difference. Let me emphasize here, this spin dipole moment is defined in momentum space, not in the coordinate space. Yeah.
Okay. It's closer probably to helium 3.
Exactly. What we did is just a particle channel analogy. I will show that it's a comparison between helium 3. Even. Let's take the two-dimensional case, for example, and we define the two spatial components of the spin dipole moment. Each of them is a three vector in the spin space. Let's pay attention to this angular form factor, sine theta and cosine theta. This reflects the P wave or the dipole moment nature. For this structure, this order parameter pattern is depicted here. then the mean field Hamiltonian for such a state is a sigma dot k type spin of the coupling. The coupling strength is proportional to the other parameter. Since this spin of the coupling is derived from this transition, we may ask what kind of symmetry breaking pattern should it be. To answer this sort of question, let me sketch a possible phase diagram. The horizontal axis here is a coupling constant, it's F1A. I shall explain what F1A means later. On the right-hand side, I assume it's a disordered phase, it's ordinary from a liquid state. In such a state, the spin up and spin down from the surface are with equal volume. Such a state has two independent rotational symmetry, orbit and the spin rotational symmetry, respectively. On the left-hand side is the ordered phase, where a spin up the coupling already been generated. Such a state is a sphere isotropic. If we perform rotations in orbit and the spin channels exactly in the same way, such a state doesn't change. But if we perform two rotations in a different way, say if we fix the momentum and only rotate the spin, the system changes. This symmetry breaking pattern is called a relative spin orbital symmetry breaking. It's a concept developed by Tony Leggett in the context of Helium-3 system. Okay. Having briefly described this isotropic phase, we'll discuss this anisotropic cousin. In such a state, we'll say it's a realized example of anisotropic electron-liquid crystal state. You know, spatial anisotropy plays an important role in condensed matter physics, in particular in the liquid crystal physics. Liquid crystal has an important phase called mimetic phase, which breaks rotational symmetry but still maintains translational invariance. This classical physics has a quantum version, which is called the mimetic electron liquid crystal state. One simplest version is that the circular Fermi surface is distorted into an ellipse. This state was discussed by Steve Kielsen, Yuval Fredkin, and Vadim Agnasin quite several years ago. This mimetic electron liquid crystal state has been proposed to exist in many strongly correlated systems. Recently, there's an exciting experimental result in this strontium ruthenate material. This is a quasi two-dimensional bilayer material. In the presence of quite large magnetic field around 7, 8 Tesla, this system develops a metamagnetic phase transition. Then in this phase, the transport properties of relativity is measured along x and y axis. As you can see, there's a strong spatial anisotropy for this relativity measurement. This picture can be easily understood in terms of the Fermi surface mimetic distortion. This anisotropic distortion gave us an easy axis and a hard axis for the charge transport. Sorry? Well, this is easy, this is hard.
Sure, but if I look at the data,
you know, this is the
drastic.
Oh, I see.
Easy hard direction.
Okay, I should have changed the color.
A very large distortion of the Fermi surface. Could count for that?
The three. This is not my results. You know, these are just present people's understanding. There's still some controversy.
In terms of just the anisotropy of a spatially isotropic, spatially uniform anisotropic state, much more likely to be associated with domain walls.
They have a new result. In such a state, they tilt this magnetic field a little bit, so basically we remove the domain wall. This, then they measure resistivity along A and B axis. We still observe such an isotropy. The domain wall is what people originally observed, that that is in this phase, the magnetic, this relativity get a huge jump. But here they can explicit the anisotropy. Oh, three times, right? If I want to three here, two times large. But now it's not still not, since such a material is quite complicated, so it has several Fermi surface. Now it's not clear whether this distortion occurs in which Fermi surface yet. This is a quite new result, it's actually half a year ago.
What are the magnetic properties of this combined?
So this material at zero magnetic field is a paramagnet. But if
the problem is very strong, sufficiently strong anisotropy.
Not very strong. There's some anisotropy, but not very strong. But the system develops a metamagnetic transition at the 7-8 star, and magnetization has a huge jump. Then this anisotropy appears in such a phase. 7-8 star.
There's also a jump. So if you look at the red curve, it's also a sudden jump.
Yeah, this is not very clear. Yeah, the overall conductance, the overall resistivity, there are some reduced. Probably some domain wall, still some domain wall remains. Probably that reason.
So what's the direction of the magnetic field?
Magnetic field is basically it's along the perpendicular to this the two-dimensional plane. So now they tilted a little bit, just try to pin the domain wall, to remove the domain wall, pin the distortion.
But the in-plane component is always parallel to the easy axis for transport?
No. It's, well, let me see. Yeah.
What determines the direction of the easy axis?
It's like, this I didn't remember clear. This is a good question. But here, how is that they're correlated?
Is it in plane or perpendicular to the plane?
Which one? What?
Easy axis.
It's in plane. We have A and B axis. So one of them is easy axis, the other is a hard axis.
And how is it related to the direction of the magnetic field?
This should probably arise from some spin of the coupling. I think it's not well understood yet. Since the I didn't remember how it's what described in the paper. They are correlated, either parallel or anti-parallel, either parallel or perpendicular. I didn't. They apply magnetic fields to tilt a little bit along A or B axis, but it doesn't occupy.
Okay,
sorry. The largest component is the perpendicular plane, but there are some small components in the plane. If the magnetic field is rigorously perpendicular plane, then the distortion can occur either along A axis or B axis to create a domain wall. You cannot see the anisotropy. Just the, because there are already domain walls, so the anisotropy is averaged out. The tilting of this magnetic field just to remove the domain wall. Not very clear. From here, it's probably you can see because there are some jump. Probably there are still some domain wall remains. But you can see even when outside the phase, at a even larger magnetic field, then this distortion presumably vanishes. This relativity still doesn't return. So this is not very understood. This magnetic electron liquid crystal state is also proposed to exist in the two-dimensional gallium arsenide and aluminum gallium arsenide heterojunctions at a very high magnetic field in a high Landau level region. When the filling factor is close to a half integer number filling, then again the resistivity is measured along A axis and along the Y axis and the X axis as depicted in the dashed line and the solid line respectively. Again, we can see there's a strong spatial anisotropy. Well, it's not clear. It depends on different groups. Most of the people probably saw it's a stripe, but you are the Fredkin and Steve Kivelson, they have some arguments. It's not stripe, let's say, pneumatics. Basically, when they make the IV curve, they see a quite good linear dispersion, which means that if the stripe will exhibit quite strong nonlinear IV curve, it's an argument. So it's really the stripe is melted. It's no longer stripe, but it's just a pneumatic. Yeah, I'm sure Bill, you are experts on this topic. So that depends on different people. Now, for both examples, both phases, they exist in the high magnetic field where the spin degree of freedom is in fact frozen. We'll see this anisotropic pivotal magnetic phase is an electron liquid crystal phase with spin degree of freedom. In such a phase, the Fermi surface exhibits a pivot distortion. The spin up Fermi surface shifts right, spin down, shifts left. Again, we can see there's no net spin moment if average the spin over the Fermi surface goes zero. Like it exhibits a spin dipole moment in the momentum space. Again, the spin dipole moment is defined in momentum space, not in coordinate space. This cosine theta is angular form factor. Such a state is anisotropic in both orbit and spin space, so it can be considered as mimetic in both orbit and the spin channels. Okay, so far, we finished the introduction part. Basically, we have shown that the unconventional magnetic state is an analogy of the unconventional superconductivity in the context of magnetism. It's a high partial wave channel generalization of ferromagnetic state. Unconventional magnetic state can be classified into two groups. The isotropic phase, it provides a new mechanism to generate the spin of the coupling. Its anisotropic cousin is an electron liquid crystal state with a spin degree of freedom. Next, let me present the mechanism for this unconventional magnetic state. I will show it arises from the Fermi surface instability of the Pomarachik line. I will explain what is Pomarachik instability. I will further discuss the mean field physical structures. Most of our current understanding of interacting electron system is based on the Landau Fermi liquid theory. The essential part of this theory is the existence of the Fermi surface. Well, electrons close to Fermi surface are important for the physical properties of such a state. The Landau's theory is characterized by the interaction functions between electrons over the Fermi surface is a forward scattering process. If there's no external spin of the coupling, this interaction function can be conveniently divided into the density channel interaction and the spin channel interaction respectively. Traditionally, they are denoted as Fs or Fa, symmetric or asymmetric. These two Landau interaction functions can be further decomposed in different orbital partial wave channels. To make them dimensionless, we multiply the density of states, so we arrive at a number of different Landau parameters. This Fermi liquid theory is completely determined by the Landau parameters. Pomeranchuk, he found that in order for the Fermi surface to be stable, these Landau parameters can be too negative, otherwise the Fermi surface will be distorted. Basically, he treated the Fermi surface as an elastic membrane in the momentum space and tried to disturb the Fermi surface a little bit. Certainly, there's a kinetic energy penalty. There's also a change of the interaction energy, which is proportional to the Landau parameters. And if we add these two contributions together, then if this criterion is met, then Fermi surface, its surface tension vanishes, and Fermi surface begins to be distorted. This criterion is called a Pomeranchuk instability criterion. The most familiar example of Pomeranchuk instability is just a ferromagnetic phase transition. It's an instability of the F0A channel. Zero means orbital S wave. A means a spin attribute channel. The pneumatic electron liquid crystal state we mentioned above is an instability in the F2S channel. S means in the density channel. 2 means is a bipolar, is a quadrupolar distortion. The unconventional magnetic state we are interested will arise from the Pomeranchuk instability in the spin channel. Let me take the simplest case, F1A channel, for example. A means spin triplets, Y means orbital pivot. These two Fermi surface structures are what we have already presented. Now let me just summarize. This isotropic case, the Fermi surface remains circular. The P wave distortion exhibits in the spin channel. We double this phase, beta phase. This beta phase is an anisotropic cousin. The P wave distortion exhibits in the Fermi surface channel. We double this phase, alpha phase. We use this terminology, alpha and beta phases, because they are quite similar to the superfluid helium 3 A and B phases. Now let me briefly summarize what is the PDM3A and B phases. The core pairing structure in such a state is a P wave, which should be the core pairing. The spin degree of freedom of the core pairing can be described by a so-called D vector. Now in a D phase, the configuration of a D vector can be chosen to be parallel to the momentum of the particle inside the core pair. As a result, the B phase is essentially isotropic. The magnitude of gap function is a constant over the Fermi surface. Such a state is an anisotropic cousin called the Helium-3A phase, where the gap function is anisotropic over the Fermi surface. In a three-dimensional system, it has a point nodes over the Fermi surface. If we compare the Helium-3B and A phases with the alpha and the beta phases, so from the symmetry point of view, they are quite similar to each other. Now let me provide a mean field theory for such a state. Let me, for simplicity, look at the two-dimensional P-wave case, for example. Let's define all the parameters. Their physical meaning is the spin current flowing x in the y directions. Each of them is a three vector in the spin space. Or, equivalently, their physical meaning can be considered as a spin dipole moment over the momentum space. Please pay attention to this angular form factor, cosine theta and sine theta. They reflect to the P-wave structure. If we compare this order parameter to the ferromagnetic order, you can see they are quite similar to each other. But in the ferromagnetic case, the angular form factor is a trivial constant 1 because it is the S-wave channel. So this can be easily generalized to arbitrary partial wave channel. Then in that case, the order parameter just spin multiple moments over the Fermi surface. We only need to replace the angular form factor. Now this is the many body interactions. This is the spin current interaction. So this interaction looks quite unrealistic, but it's quite reasonable. It describes the simplest non-adsorbed channel exchange interactions. Then if we follow the standard mean field procedure, we decouple this interaction and write a mean field Hamiltonian. But in order to classify the possible ground state configuration, we need to construct the Jeans-Planck free energy up to the quartic level. It satisfies all the symmetry constraints, including spin rotational symmetry, orbital rotational symmetry, parity, and time reversal symmetry. This coefficient of the quadratic term is important. If it goes negative, it means that the instability occurs. And we have two different quartic terms, V1 and V2. This term is particularly important. Whether the coefficient goes negative or positive, give us the state configurations. We will see it corresponds to alpha and beta phases. Let's remember this term is N1 cross N2. If it goes negative, then it means that. This is a zero temperature. Hmm? This is zero temperature. It's a proportional.
Yeah, I understand. Yeah. But
yes.
That looks like. Landau theory.
This is Landau theory.
Yeah.
This is Ginsburg-Landau free energy.
It can happen that, for example, it happens at final temperature.
Yes, final temperature will increase R. Mm-hmm. Yeah, this expression is for zero temperature. It depends on whether it's Landau parameters, whether it's negatively large enough to drive the phase transition. Mm-hmm. If we had final temperature, probably there is another correction. Probably is square t square or something or linear t. I can't remember.
We need to have the final temperature. Do we need that density of electrons should be sufficiently small or?
Well, the criterion is that the Landau parameter is negatively large enough, the Pomerantz instability. But this Landau parameter has two contributions. One is density of state, the other is the interaction. So if the density of state is, can be enhanced, it's favorable to have such a phase translation. The density of state is related to density of band structure.
In two-dimensional system, you can simply regulate the density, the total density.
Yeah, but you can put a system in the lattice, you can, in some particular band structure, enhance the density of state with some Van Hoff singularity.
How can you drive this?
Well, we derive is just, we have this mean field theory, just calculate.
How do you drive, then you're asking, you know, you microscopically, what's...
How to derive this?
Drive.
Physically, what do you do system? What kind
give
of
a
system?
Physical example. Which
for example, if you have clean interaction, and you calculate the exchange interaction, and you can classify into different channels, S wave, P wave, D wave. But it's currently not clear whether clean interaction is enough or not to drive the phase transition in a P wave. But any interaction that has contribution in different channels, if in that channel the interaction is large enough, then the instability occurs.
Do you want to
do related
to
this one?
Yeah.
Well, this term is closely related to lambda parameter. But this tool basically is proportional density of states, Fermi velocity, or this kind of thing. I can give you the expression, but it's quite complicated. It depends on the boundary structure detail. It's written in our long paper, but basically these two are not dependent on lambda parameter.
So the sign of V2 determines whether it's isotropic.
Yes, it depends on detail, the boundary structure, the nonlinear dispersion relation, something like that. We can change the sign of V1, of this term V2.
You can choose between
V2. Yes. If V2 is negative, that means that the N1 and N2 they prefer to be perpendicular to each other with an equal amplitude. Without loss of generality, we can choose N1 paired to X axis, N2 paired to Y axis. Then you plug in this configuration to negative Hamiltonian corresponds to beta phase. On the other hand, if V2 is positive, then it prefers N1 and N2 to be collinear, and their ratio of their magnitude. For simplicity, we just set N2 to 0, only allow N1, and this corresponds to alpha phase. So we can see that both phases, they arrive from the same Fermi surface instability. Exactly. Literally, it depends on, you know, the definition of spin current is a little bit tricky. So if we use the group velocity to define, there's no spin transport. So now the velocity, the dispersion relation, the shift, the center is shifted here. So if we the spectrum, we need to recalculate with respect to the new center, and then actually there's no net spin transport. But indeed, there has the some symmetry point of view, it's agree with the spin current, but there's no net spin transport.
So the left-hand side looks very much like
Rushbar. Exactly. I will show how this connects to Rushbar. Yes, then this is Rushbar. Okay. Let me look at the beta phases more carefully. And then they exhibit a vortex configuration in the momentum space. This Fermi surface structure is what we discussed. And see, let's move around this vortex, this one number one. So, all the parameter configurations here. But this spin orbital coupling pattern, you know, at the Hamiltonian level, we don't have spin orbital coupling. So this spin orbital coupling is a result of symmetry spontaneous breaking. So we can arrive at energetically equivalent configurations by performing global spin rotations on such a system. So if we rotate the system around the axis at 90 degrees, and N1 rotate here, N2 rotate here, if we plug in here, you can see, this line rotated here, and this line here. Then it becomes Rushbar interaction. Or if we rotate the system around the x-axis at 180 degrees, then the N1 doesn't change, N2 flips the sign. Then again, in the momentum space, this configuration changes to Dressel-Hausz. The one number changes from 1 to minus 1. So all the,
in your system, because there's no spin over the top, neither all equivalent.
They are equivalent. Yeah, exactly. They are equivalent state. Yes, the collective mode is something like a spin wave, but not exactly the same. But it can rotate from here to here to here without the energy cost.
So suppose you have a quantum well.
Yeah.
That has a instability against the symmetry breaking with respect to the inversion.
Yes.
Say,
you probably can select one.
Yeah, So that kind of thing,
symmetry breaking
will result in this.
Yeah. It's something like in the ferromagnetic state. The spin, spontaneous spin polarizing can here, everywhere, every directions. But you have external magnetic field, you can ping one.
What I mean is that suppose you have a quantum
well,
yes. And say the spontaneous ferroelectric development in the z direction, particular direction,
pick up this one.
Drive such a
This is the Rushbaugh coupling from the asymmetry of the quantum well is like an external magnetic external spin optical field and pick up one particular configuration. If we make an analogy to the ferromagnetic transition, the method you said is like an external magnetic field in the ferromagnet.
It's a ferroelectric transition, it's not external.
Oh yeah, from but as long as the latent distortion is fixed for the spin.
So you think that cannot be described within the level of fermionic
form? The lattice, currently we haven't improved the lattice system, lattice degree of freedom. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that would be more interesting. It means a multi-fluoric coupling.
Okay. So if you want to realize something that the spin is arising spontaneous.
Sure.
Okay. So let me imagine that I have a quantum well, right? And the critical direction, which is symmetric.
Symmetric.
But due to some reason, the electricity develops. So that makes that quantum well
asymmetric, then automatically generate Rushbaugh. This one can amplify that. You have a bad Rushbaugh is small, then
and then he said, well, that's external. The external.
Let me make an analogy. So for the ordinary paramagnetic system, I can calculate the spin susceptibility. We know from a liquid that give a correction of the magnetic susceptibility. If the correction is large enough, then susceptibility diverges, right, spontaneous magnetic ferromagnetically. Here the analogy is, what you said is quite similar. If you have a Rushbaugh field, you can calculate the susceptibility response to this kind of spin orbital field. Then the Fermi liquid theory will give generalization. If this, if the lambda parameter is negative large enough, then this susceptibility diverges. Then you don't need the external field and automatically generate the spin orbital field. The relevant channel is that.
Well,
if we can realize, it would be quite exciting. This method can be easily generalized to arbitrary high partial channels. For example, in the D-wave channel, we also have alpha and beta phases. For the alpha phase, we have two elliptical. For the surface, these two ellipses are orthogonal to each other. For beta phase, with the vortex configuration, the winding number can be either positive or negative. How much time do I have? If there's not much time, I can skip this collective excitation part. This part, 15 minutes. Quick. This part is maybe technical, but there's still something interesting. You know, as a general result of symmetry spontaneous breaking, the ground state, we have a low energy excitations that's typically called ghost normals. I have further discussed the neutron scattering spectrum. And I'll further show you in particular channel, the ground state exhibit a certain pilot instability. Now let me begin with the alpha phases. The alpha phase, for simplicity, let me begin with two-dimensional period case. The alpha phase breaks both orbital and spin rotational symmetries. So the ghost normal modes, the character excitations, can be classified as the orbital modes and the spin channel modes. The orbital channel modes is just the oscillation of the distorted from the surface while keep the spin configuration unchanged. Within the random phase approximation, we can show that this mode is overdamped. The damping is anisotropic, depends on the propagation direction of the wave vector Q. If the Q is along the x-axis, then this damping is a maximum. If the Q is along y-axis, then it becomes underdamped.
What does it mean, f-s?
Fermi surface oscillation.
Ah.
Yeah. Fermi surface.
How, this is a
The question is how to excite them.
Well, this is the collecting mode.
Is it electromagnetic oscillation or what?
Well, you fix the spin, since the Fermi surface is distorted, we can distort in this way, can also in this way or this way. So there's oscillation corresponds to this, like Fermi surface, the orbital mode.
Yeah. But what is it? How to discover them experimentally? What do you mean?
Experimentally, this is hard. I don't. But the spin channel modes can be detected in the inelastic neutron scattering, but this channel mode probably is hard. But from Urado Fredkin and Steve Kielsen, they discuss this collecting mode couples to fermions, and we'll see that fermions receive a wide non-identity correction, they become a non-Fermi liquid. Electron self-energy, the imaginary part, it became a non-Fermi liquid. Probably indirectly from the fermion spectrum, you can see something. But some directly detect to this mode experimentally is hard.
So if the symmetry is a Vulcan external?
Yes.
So
you mean the lattice?
In the prism to wash.
Yeah.
Enclosed externally.
Yes, yes. Then the mode the gap.
Then you'll have a gap, right?
Exactly.
The mode is still there.
Yes, it becomes gap. Yes. Yeah. Such as if in the lattice, then this Fermi surface oscillation also become gap. And but you need temperature, it will increase the excite.
And no coupling to electromagnetic field, for example?
No, this mode doesn't. Basically, this theory can also work equally well for a neutron system, so it doesn't couple. The electromagnetic field couples the overall density, the electric field couples. But this is there's no overall density, but like a dipole. Anything can couple to the spin dipole moment, so this is quite tricky. I don't know any particular experiment method can directly couple to the dipole moment in the momentum space. That's a hard thing to experiment. So the spin channel ghost mode corresponds to fixed Fermi surface and let the spin to process. And interesting, in spite of the Fermi surface and isotropic distortion, this mode still exhibits a nearly isotropic undamped linear dispersion relations as long as the propagation will be purely dispersed. So let me discuss the neutron spectrum in the alpha phases. Unfortunately, in the elastic neutron spectrum, we shouldn't observe black peaks because all the parameters are not spin moments. They do not couple neutron moments directly. But still, fortunately, in the inelastic neutron spectrum, we are still able to observe the random peaks which develops at an orbital state. Basically, although the collective modes are all parameters, they do not couple neutron moments directly, they do couple to spin waves and can induce random peaks in the spin wave channel. Within this random phase calculation, we found this neutron spectrum. Because alpha phases is anisotropic, this random peak only appears in the spin flip channel. It doesn't appear in the spin non-flip channel.
Is it due to magnetic coupling between electrons and neutrons?
Well, it's quite interesting. The collective mode here, the spin channel mode, actually the carrier spin. Although this mode is not spin moment, but this mode carries spin. And this can couple to the neutron.
The dipolar magnetic coupling, correct?
In some sense, but this is induced, but neutron only have spin moments. So electron moments can couple to neutron moment directly. Yeah. But this other parameter is not the moment, but like a spin dipole moment. So it cannot directly couple to neutron moment. But in the order of the phase, this is the order parameter. It's a spin with the angular form factor. In the order of the phase, it can couple to spin wave, right? Because the symmetry is already broken there. And you can see this spin wave couples to this collective mode, this collective mode, and couple to spin wave. So this is collective mode. They induce a random part of the spin wave, and spin wave can be detected by neutron scattering. So in the order phase, in other words, in the order phase, the spin mode, spin wave mode, and this collecting mode become conjugate part. And the oscillation in one part induces the excitation in the spin waves. spin wave can be detected here.
What typical wavelengths for this wave do you
have in mind? Well, this is a kind of long wavelength from zero. This is Gauss collective mode, right? Gauss law mode. It's not, presumably it's a long wavelength. Well, it's not ferromagnetic. This is an interesting question, yeah. So in the ferromagnetic, it's a quadratic.
Even
yeah. This one, actually, you can see the time reversal symmetry is maintained. So the dispersion is linear. It's not a quadratic. It's an important feature. Okay, now let's discuss the collective mode in the beta phase. The beta phase collective mode is a relative spin orbital mode. So you fix the momentum and only rotate the spin, we can rotate the system around x, y, and z axis. So we have three relative spin orbital modes. If the instability occurs in the high orbital angular momentum for l larger than 2, then all these modes has a well-defined dispersion relation. It's a linear dispersion relation. As a small wave vector, this dispersion relation lies outside the particle continuum, so it's underdamped. It's a well-defined dispersion relation. Again, this relative spin orbital modes will induce resonance in the spin waves, which can be detected in the inelastic neutron scattering. But here, this phase basically is isotropic, so this resonance will appear in all the neutron modes, including both spin flip and non-spin flip mode. Now, how about in the P wave case? We have already discussed this phase a number of times. At each time, I assume the ground state is uniform, but actually, there are some caveat in it. It turns out that the uniform state can be the true ground state. The reason is that if we write the Ginzburg-Landau free energy as a spatial derivative term, it allows a term as a linear order of spatial derivative. Such a term satisfies all the symmetry constraints. Such a term is not important at high temperature disorder phase because they are at the cubic order of the order parameter. It does not important. It's not important after phase either because in there N1 and N2 they are collinear. This term simply doesn't contribute. But in the beta phase, N1 and N2 they are perpendicular to each other. This term becomes important. Suppose we twist this beta phase configuration a little bit, develop a spiral. Then this term contribution at the linear order of the momentum as a long wavelength limit. This term the in contribution dominates over the regular derivative terms. That means that uniform states are no longer stable. They are spontaneous, develop a spiral pitch. The optical value of the pitch is proportional to the order parameter. This situation is quite similar to what occurs in the chiral liquid crystal and the helical magnet system. But in both cases, because of the parity explicitly broken. Well, in the chiral liquid crystal, because the molecule itself has a certain chirality in it, it turns out that in ground state, the uniform state turns out to be it's unstable to a spiral with a pitch. In the helical magnet system, for example, the manganese silicide, because the lattice itself breaks the inversion symmetry, it generates a Gelashinsky-Maria type spin of the coupling. You can see here it also lets a linear spatial derivative. And it turns out that the spin moments in the ferromagnetic state can be collinear, develop a spiral pattern. In our case, the situation is different. Well, this parity is spontaneously broken, not explicitly broken. It's a chiral instability in an originally non-chiral system. It can be considered as a dynamic generation of a Gelashinsky-Maria type spin of the coupling. But this spiral pattern here is not a spiral for the spin moment. The spin moment is zero everywhere. It's a spiral of the spin dipole moment. So this chiral instability does not occur in the ferromagnetic phase transition. It does not occur in any other channel of Pomerantz instability either.
What do you call dynamic generation?
Well, this Gelashinsky-Maria needs explicitly parity broken, for example, in the manganese silicide because the lattice lacks of inversion center. But here we have a theory from begin with, we don't have spin of the coupling is parity even. But in this beta phase, this beta phase spontaneously break parity. And after the parity is explicitly broken, it generates a Jalachinsky Moria type spin up the Kali, which causes the other parameter to spiral.
Cubic invariant.
But in the ordered phase, this term gets expectation value, so it behaves like a quadratic. So that's why this term in the disordered phase is at the cubic level, so it's not important at the disordered phase. But at the ordered phase, since this field is condensed, get expectation value. So in this ordered phase, then we get a coefficient which is proportional to the other parameter cube contributes to the free energy. Mm-hmm. Then this in the ordered phase, the parity is spontaneously broken, and then it gives us Jalachinsky Moria type physics. But in the disordered phase, we don't have such a thing.
So why
one of the
spontaneous
generation?
It's like usually when
you
call the
line generation,
it's like quantum
fluctuation
to induce some kind of.
No, this is in the ordered phase. In disordered phase, we don't have that.
But in all the human, it's like a new field level, you have the ground state, something
simply
broken.
Right.
So this is not really the dynamic in general.
No, this is dynamic in the sense that it's from phase transition. This can fluctuate in this sense. Not static means that you have external field pinning. You can't move. So you can argue, yeah, why is this called dynamic? Well, here is dynamic in the same sense as you said. Since you have a spontaneous ground state, this spin orbital coupling actually it can fluctuate, depends on the what kind of ground state you choose, right? The collective mode causes your fluctuation of spin orbital coupling. In this sense, this spin orbital coupling is not fixed by the underlying relativistic physics, but really a many body collective effect. It can fluctuate. In this sense, it is dynamic.
So all spontaneously generated dynamic.
Yeah. For example,
always generated spontaneous.
Yeah.
It just means it's not.
For example, if we make analogy to the ferromagnet, it means that the ferromagnet state, the spin polarizing not necessarily along the z-axis, can go here and go here. They can move. Okay. Hope I take too much time. Next, let me discuss the possible experimental realization and detection method. Up to now, we are not aware of any conclusive experimental system to find this unconventional magnetic state. But conceptually, it's quite a natural generalization of magnetism. The driving force is still exchange interactions, but we need pretty strong exchange interaction in the non-S3 channel. So taking into account the experimental discovery of the unconventional superconductivity, we are quite encouraged to expect this unconventional magnetic state can be found experimentally in the future. So let me skip this part.
So if you compare the time scale.
Oh. Yeah, this is about 2,500 years ago. Okay, now let me summarize some possible directions to search this unconventional magnetic state. This hyperfermion compound, uranium fluorinated silicide, is a good candidate. Such a material exhibits a mysterious surface transition at 17 Kelvin. From the thermodynamic quantity measurement, it exhibits a huge jump in the supercritical heat, so it really means it enters a new state. Fortunately, after 20 years research efforts, the nature of this state is still unknown. There's recently a really interesting work by Chandra Verma's group. He proposed a hidden order. In his language, he called that a helicity order, but in our language, it's just a p-wave upper phase, the spin up from the surface, shift to the up, spin down from the surface, shift to up and to down. he calculated the thermodynamic quantity and agreed with the experimental results reasonably well. So this is encouraging, but we need to bear in mind this hidden order behavior is quite controversial. At the current stage, this PV alpha phase is a good candidate, but it's not clear whether it can really be responsible for this hidden order behavior. Now let's look at the bilinear reasoning material again. The enigmatic distortion in such a state exists in the large external magnetic field. So this distortion, the phase transition, can be considered as a mixture of instability in both density and spin channels. It's pretty much close to what we want. What we want is in a zero field phase transition with zero magnetization. So probably such a transition can occur in a similar compound, probably in the same Roussnet family. Now let's look at another strongly correlated system with two-dimensional electron gas. Well, the lambda parameters, which has been calculated using the quantum Carlo simulation by Seppli and the Martins group, they found that F1A is always negative and keep decreasing as the density is lowered, where the particle density is inversely proportional to RS squared. Unfortunately, these numbers, although it's negative in the right direction, but they are not negatively large enough to drive the phase transition. But this simulation was done in a relatively high density regime, small s, so it would be interesting to if the simulation can further extend it to a low density regime, to say whether these lambda parameters can be negatively large enough to drive the distribution. Now, if we assume this exists, then experimental detection method would be very straightforward. For example, the upper angular resolve the photo emission spectroscopy can be used to detect the Fermi surface distortion. Actually, the upper has already been used in the conventional spin orbital coupling material. Because of the band splitting for the spin configurations, the upper line shape exhibits a double peak structure. Now, in our alpha and beta phases, we also have band splitting. We should also expect this double peak splitting. But in our case, the band splitting is proportional to other parameter, thus is temperature and pressure dependent. A neutron scattering spectroscopy is another powerful method to study magnetic properties of system. As we have analyzed before, we shouldn't observe black peaks, but fortunately, we are able to see inelastic neutron scattering. We should see random peaks below TC. This unconventional magnetic state should also exhibit interesting transport properties. For example, in the beta phases, we have two different Fermi surfaces. The different size will give us two different, if we perform the quantum oscillation experiment of the Schubert-curved Haas magneto oscillations, each Fermi surface will contribute a different frequency. As a superposition, we should observe this bead pattern. And again, this bead pattern should be correlated to temperature and other external parameters. For the D-wave alpha phase, we should also observe another interesting transport properties. If we pass a charge current in such a system, it will automatically generate a spin current. It can be very easily understood in this way. Suppose we pass a current in the x direction, and because of the spatial anisotropy, the spin down from the surface and spin up from the surface will contribute differently, so we automatically generate a spin current. For the general situation, if the charge current flowing in the arbitrary direction, we induce the spin current. The direction is symmetric respect to x-axis. This induced spin current will result in a spin accumulation in sample's edge, which in principle can be detected optically. But this is the summary of the talk. We have showed that unconventional magnetic state is an analogy of unconventional superconductivity. It's a high partial wave channel generalization of ferromagnetism. Its unconventional magnetic state can be classified anisotropic and isotropic pattern. The isotropic phase gave us a new mechanism to generate the spin orbital coupling, and the anisotropic phase gave us an example of electron liquid crystal with a spin degree of freedom. And thank you for your attention. Sorry to say. Yeah. How to relate it to that?
You need a large magnitude amount of
current from SMC. Which means a strong positive
interaction. I'm thinking about this, it depends on the density state, right? You're giving a flat band, like to increase the tangible state.
That's
true. Possible?
What time, yeah, that's the reason I want to give this talk here, is that, you know, this phase is quite difficult to realize in condensed matter, particularly because of the p-wave exchange effect. But the contact from the p-wave effect by randomness probably...
No, it's just flat band, like
online. Flat band is interaction. The interaction is long range
interaction.
And also usually the S-wave channel dominates all. If you flat bands, the density of state enhanced, but the phase was all the channels, not only for the P-wave channel. You know, probably the S-wave channel is more important dominant. So the ideal interaction for drop this P-wave probably like this. It's a repulsive interaction. But the stronger repulsive part is not at zero, but at this side. Then if you do Fourier transform, the p-wave part will get dominant. But this is quite difficult for ordinary condensed matter system. But I saw that in the p-wave flash part, because of the centrifugal potential, it behaves like this. But the problem is that the p-wave flash part of the system is not stable.
You probably don't even need the resonance. You already have a p-wave interactions.
But not much enough.
How do you change the
generation? So this is the reason why this itinerant mechanism is more difficult than superfluid. It's essentially a strong coupling system. In superconductivity, if I have attracting interaction, no matter how small the driving set is, but here, it has this stoner or pomological criterion. The interaction must be stronger, large enough for positive criteria. It's not a recoupling problem. So that's why this. So that's personally, I felt that people know code atom seems that in condensed matter, I think the mechanisms in a large part, but currently in the code atom community, it doesn't receive much attention. I'm not sure whether it's possible to realize such an itinerant mechanism. Conceptually, theoretically, it's a much more difficult question than superfluidity. It can be addressed in such a well-controlled system, would be great. In particular, I see when if the p-wave can be realized, it's really exciting. I don't know how it's directly connected.
Let me ask you. So, I would like first to ask you whether I understood it correctly that the main difference between, to say, unconventional superconductivity and conventional magnetism is that in unconventional superconductivity we have Cooper pairs of spin with spin one,
yeah.
And here we have electron hole pair.
Exactly.
So that is neutral pair with spin one.
Exactly.
Correct. What is the action of different small perturbations on that? First of all, spin orbit interaction. We know that, for example, B phase in unconventional superconductors acquires immediately the fixed angle, 104 degrees.
Yes.
Does it happen here?
We haven't calculated that. But if the system has a spin orbital coupling, it will choose probably not this configuration, but this rotate a little bit. It's possible, like a dipole locking in the Higgs 3D case. It's very possible. But obviously, it hasn't. Go to that stage.
Another also very simple question. If you apply a magnetic field, then because this spin, the pairs have spin one, they will tend to orient along the magnetic field.
Yeah, in such a system, the spin will shoot a little bit along.
So what is the magnetic susceptibility? Did you calculate it?
Magnetic susceptibility is pretty much the same as the ordinary Fermi liquid.
Does it differ from Pauli paramagnetism or not?
It's the same. For example, in the Rushbaugh system, if you calculate the magnetic susceptibility, it's almost the same as the ordinary Fermi. Here, the
it's a standard Landau expression.
Yeah. But here, if you apply magnetic field, the spin configuration is like a cute ellipse along the magnetic wire.
No, standard Landau expression doesn't go, but doesn't work because you are in the area of of instability, correct?
Well, this instability in the F1H channel is not in the F0H channel. So in the magnetic system, the magnetic channel is paramagnetic. This is, but you are seeing the magnetic system being in such a phase. But this phase is critical. It has instability in the F1H channel, not in the F0H channel. But the magnetic channel is paramagnetic. So it's of the finite of magnetic susceptibility. It's the poly susceptibility.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you. Okay, let's think of some, if you are interested.